Your Steve Jones Show podcast audio is loading. Steve Jones Show podcast, sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Agency, Mount Pleasant Mills in Northumberland, and online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. Auto, home, life, business insurance. If service and price means something to you, it means everything to them. It's Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. Sunbury Motors Studio is mobile today. Sunbury Motors, taking great care of their customers from pre-sale to sale to the service department. It is Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. In the next half hour, the Q&A from Jim Delaney's press conference, including his discussion of the Penn State issue. The fact that Jim was not aware of five congressmen sending a letter saying that they would like to see the sanctions against Penn State lifted. He was not aware of that. That's not good.
Well, I'm sure he's aware of it now. I mean, not only getting questions about it will change things in a hurry.
Well, he maintains what I've maintained, and that is as follows. Congress can send all the letters they want. In the end, I still say it's former Senator George Mitchell. If he writes reports and continues to write reports the way he has, and the annual report is very close to what last year's annual report looks like, and there's a recommendation made by him, like there was quietly some recommendations made by him last year, that's the key to it, and not congressional action. And his next annual report comes out at the end of next month, or possibly the first week of September.
I'm going to ask you to do something I know you don't like doing, but I'm going to ask you to speculate a little bit. Let's say it comes out at the end of next month, the beginning of September, and it's another glowing report. Can the NCAA, with the season already be underway, can they lift the sanctions in time? Do they have enough time to do that for this season?
Of course they do. What's going on at that time that makes it...
Well, I can't think of anything until like November.
There's nothing that makes it time sensitive.
Yeah, I can't think of anything until November, but I didn't know if there was anything I'm not thinking about.
Okay, they know that as of right now, they have 2 years remaining on the bowl ban. They know as of right now, next year they'll be allowed to have 80 scholarship players. This year they have 72. So they know as of right now it's 80, and they know as of right now they can't go to a bowl game or the Big Ten championship game. If it is a really strong, positive report for Penn State, if it is, well, if they want to lift the recruiting sanction and increase it to five more, okay, if that's done in September even, fine. Now James Franklin and staff have something to work with. But you also have to work with a maximum of 25, too. So sometimes the numbers don't add up in terms of the number of people you lose plus the 25. I mean, this year, would they sign 25 guys? They have 72 on the roster.
Right.
And scholarship players.
Yeah, and there was a discussion about that today at the Big Ten Media Day where he sat down with reporters for a couple of hours. And the discussion was that he was trying to play it safe.
Yeah. Well, you have to play it safe. You got to be smart about it. You don't want to overstep what you're doing here. Okay? For example, I saw today here at the ballpark, because he is an intern here at the ballpark at Mahoning Valley, Anthony Stanko. Anthony Stanko is an intern here at Mahoning Valley. He still counts toward the 75 right now, even though he's not playing at Penn State. because that was part of the sanction, that if somebody was no longer with the program but still academically eligible, they could not take him off scholarship. So he still counts toward the 75, even though he's not playing. And I just talked to Anthony 2 hours ago. Okay? So there are subtle things like that still in there that when he talks about playing it safe, yeah, when you get into the numbers game, you have to play it safe there. As for the bowl bid, so in other words, you can increase the scholarship thing just like they did last year. And, of course, that allowed Bill O'Brien at the time to accelerate the recruiting because there were a number of people they had to say no to because they were held to 15. Now suddenly the door was open to 10 additional scholarships. That opened up the conversation with other people, and it paid off. You saw Penn State ended up signing 25 guys. The next part is the bowl bid. Say, for example, they want to lift the bowl ban. Say that that turns out to be one of the recommendations, and in early to mid-September, say they say, hey, everything's gone well. We had talked last year about the possibility of it. We've decided to do it. We're going to lift it. Fine. Win six games.
See, I would think, I would think that the postseason ban would have to be done sometime before the end of September.
Why?
Well, I don't know how you could go much later, and I mean, by mid to late October,
first of all,
bulls are already looking at teams.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
They're out there. No, they're not. They're out there spending money and sending people for no apparent reason. Okay.
That's a fallacy.
Okay, that's a fallacy. Okay, every game's on television, for goodness sakes. And the Big Ten,
money
if you
no
look,
apparent reason.
Well, exactly. I mean, why do they have to go personally scout a team? Hey, we ought to have. Did you? I mean, Jim Delaney's press conference yesterday spelled it out. The Big Ten, under the new bowl agreements, now has far more power as to who actually goes. Where? So instead of, oh, X finished here, so X is going to the Outback Bowl. Gee, it's the third straight year they've gone to the Outback Bowl. The Big Ten is going to have the power to say, no, we're going to send X to the Outback Bowl because they haven't gone yet. You're going to go to San Francisco to the Kraft Bowl. So the Big Ten's going to get more involved in stuff like that, in assignments. The key is winning six games. After that, it's catch as catch can as to who goes where. There's some pecking order to a point. So technically, even though this is not the way you want to do it, you could make the decision on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and you probably would be in good shape. Now, you're not going to. You want to do it in September so that the team is aware of what they're playing for.
That's the other thing I was
thinking,
too.
And at the same time, you also want to do it before September 13th.
Okay, what's magical about September 13th that I'm not thinking about?
That's the opening Big Ten game. If Penn State is eligible to go to a bowl game,
okay,
that means they are now eligible to go to the Big Ten championship game. Oh.
Well, I mean, but they could even do that through the end of September, too.
No, you would like the team to know that when they play the opening conference game, they have an opportunity to go to the championship game.
Now let me ask you this, and again, this is fun speculation.
That's only fair to the players on the team that they know when they play that game, hey, look, we win this game, we get off to a good start in the conference. I mean, you know, we've got a shot.
See, this is fun speculation.
That's why September 13th to me is an important date in all this, that it would be important to let them know. And ironically, Penn State plays the one and only conference game that week.
See, this is where I think the speculation on my part could be interesting, because I see the NCAA getting that report. I can't foresee any issues with it compared to the last one, the last report that came down. So the NCAA takes a look at it, and in a bold gesture, tries to improve its own PR right now, decides to lift at least the postseason ban, if nothing else, as of before that September opener.
Right.
As a bold PR move for the NCAA.
Well, look, for the NCAA, here are a couple of issues, okay? The NCAA right now is surrounded on all sides. They are surrounded by the O'Bannon lawsuit. They are surrounded by the NLRB ruling on Northwestern. They're surrounded by the five conferences wanting more autonomy in terms of decisions they make. There's another lawsuit beyond the Paterno lawsuit that's out there that I can't remember the name of. It has nothing to do with Penn State. It has to do with something else, and I apologize for not having more details on it, but there's another lawsuit they have to deal with. And then, of course, then there's Penn State itself. Of all the issues that we just talked about, what is the easiest one for the NCAA to solve and get off its plate?
That's exactly right. And what one's going to get a ton of attention right away?
Well, and then the next part is, remember, there are three more bowl games this year, which means you are now going to have 76 schools eligible for bowl games. It turns out that two of them, I believe it's Idaho and UNLV, are ineligible because of APR. I believe they've both appealed, but as of this moment. You need to have 76 eligible teams. Now, we're not, you know, I'm not guaranteeing how many wins Penn State has, but it also opens the door, logistically, to having another team to be potentially eligible to fill bowl slots. From their point of view, the Mitchell report to me, if Penn State comes out on the positive end of all this, potentially is a means to an end that will benefit, obviously, Penn State, but also have some benefits for the NCAA.
That's it. I think the NCAA right now uses, and this is why I said what I said earlier, I think the NCAA uses it as a PR move. I mean, just today, they just settled another suit. This one, a $70 million suit that's going to cost them $70 million in testing for concussions. As you
that
said,
may be the one, that may be the one I was talking about.
Yeah, as you said, everything kind of surrounds them, but this was a preliminary settlement and a class action suit over concussions brought on by collegiate athletes.
Right.
And they got off a lot cheaper than the NFL did. The NFL spent $765
million. Right. Let's see. Let me see if the name jives with the one I know. It is.
I don't know the name attached to it for sure, but I think it's on behalf of an Eastern right. Illinois player, Adrian Arrington. That's the one.
Adrian Arrington.
Yeah. He was joined by a Central Arkansas football player, Derek Owens, and Angela Palacios, I believe. I may be wrong with that pronunciation, but he's a soccer player. And then there was a hockey player involved, too, from Maine, Kyle Solomon, in the original suit.
Okay. Yeah, that may be the other one I was referring to. I mean, they're trying to get some things off their plate. They've obviously paid out a lot of money on this. I think that when you look at it's a whole new team now at Penn State in terms of president, athletic director, football coach, I mean, all the way through. So, I mean, you know, and they made other changes along the way. You know, you can debate whether they're good, bad, indifferent, necessary, unnecessary. You can debate all that, whatever you want. But they still have been, they've still made the changes. And plus the number of recommendations that were put together in the report, which numbered 119. Only seven of them dealt with athletics. The other ones dealt with the Cleary Act. At least the vast majority did. So there are reasons that obviously benefit Penn State tremendously if they do lift it. But there will also be a couple of reasons that actually would benefit the NCAA if they lift it. So that's what makes the whole thing so interesting. We'll have to see. If the report is what we think it is.
That's exactly right. It'll work well into Penn State's favor. And maybe at least a lifting of at least, you know, the ban anyway of postseason, if nothing else, and could end up being more than that. We'll have more with the Steve Jones Show coming up after the news.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
When it comes to insurance, let's face it, the options and the sources keep changing. It gets confusing. Do you really know what you're getting? Better yet, do you know what you're not getting? Save time and save your mind with a simple call to the Kratzer Insurance Agency of Mount Pleasant Mills or Northumberland. For 51 years, the Kratzer Insurance Agency has been keeping the Susquehanna Valley insured and protected from whatever comes our way. If your policy is up for renewal, or you suffer the disappointment of cut-rate insurance deals on the internet or over the phone, then listen. Don't sacrifice personal service. The Kratzer Insurance Agent, your independent agent, has your best interest in mind. Of course they have competitive prices.
Hi, this is Kim Ebright. Call us, stop in, or visit us online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Standing together against whatever. Family, friendship, security. The Kratzer Insurance Agency.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland, Auto, Home, Life, Business Insurance. If service and price mean something to you, and in this day and age, I think it means something to everybody. It means everything to them. It's Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. The Sunbury Motors Studio is mobile today. Sunbury Motors. Pre-sale, sale, and then once you buy the vehicle, they take great care of it in the service department. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin Herr alongside today.
How are you? How's the weather today? Yesterday it was, you were in an Alfred Hitchcock movie with the birds up in the crow's nest, and it was windy. What's it like today in just over the border in Ohio?
Right now, sunny and calm.
Well, that's not good, bad. Because that means it's coming our way in the next 12 hours. So,
yeah, so sunny and calm. Maybe a possibility of a shower early tonight, but that's it. Looking forward to that. All right. Jim Delaney. This has been a time, as I mentioned yesterday, I feel like those who are ingrained in the college model, in the collegiate model, have lost the narrative on the collegiate model, and they've been losing the narrative to those who believe that football and men's basketball players should receive money or some sort of payment. And they've been losing the PR battle and the narrative there. They've regained some of their footing by the college commissioners getting out there. Bob Bowlesby, in particular, was very vocal at the Big 12 meetings. Larry Scott talked some about it. Mike Slive has talked about it. Bob Bowlesby, though, in particular, is the one that more vocal than anybody else. Jim Delaney, when he speaks, people around intercollegiate athletics listen. Yesterday, he had his press conference at Big Ten Media Day in Chicago.
Hi, Jim. Joe Giuliano from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Last week, five congressmen sent a letter to the NCAA asking that the sanctions against Penn State be rescinded. I wanted to know what your reaction is to the letter, and also, do you feel that they should be lifted, restricted, or sustained?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that letter. I wasn't copied on it. This is the first I've heard of it. What I would tell you is that, you know, the leadership over the last 3 years, 2 years, I guess, you know, by President Erickson and Dave Joyner and Coach O'Brien, you know, really met the challenge as far as we were concerned. We are a partner in the integrity agreement among and between Big Ten, Penn State, and NCAA. We've worked really closely with Senator Mitchell and have fully supported his recommendations as this has played out. So I'm unfamiliar with that. I hope that if progress continues to be made, that the NCAA would look positively on any request that is suggested by Senator Mitchell. We will definitely follow his lead on it. And I look forward to getting a copy of that letter and learning more about the request.
Take our next question here, stage right on the aisle, then go to the back right of the room.
Jim, Todd Porter from the Canton Repository. Your counterpart in the Big 12 recently expressed an opinion that cheating pays and there are NCAA enforcement issues. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, first, Bob's a good friend, and he's been a great leader not only at Iowa and Stanford, but now at the Big 12. You know, I have made comments from time to time about NCAA enforcement. It's an area where I started my career, and it's fairly clear to me that the conferences have to get together. They have to find a mechanism or a process that serves our needs. I've used the word overmatched. I haven't really gone beyond much beyond that, and I don't intend to today. But my hope is over the next year to 18 months that the major conferences can come together, we can find ways and processes and procedures that fit with what we're trying to achieve, which is a level of deterrence, a level of compliance, and a level of punishment if it's earned. So we need a system, we need regulations, and we need a system that works. I think that there's no doubt that NCAA enforcement has struggled over the last couple of years, and I take a personal interest and have a personal desire to work with Bob and Mike, Larry, and John to see what the right balance is. Bob was a little more colorful in his language, but I will keep my words where they are right now.
Go to the back right, stage right of the room, and then we'll come back over to you, Seth.
Yeah, David Woods of the Indianapolis Star. Commissioner Bowlesby also indicated that he thought all men's sports beyond basketball and football could be imperiled by some of the forces impinging on the NCAA. Do you see a day when there'll be a large number of sports for women and football and basketball only for men on college campuses?
You know, my crystal ball in that area is not great. You know, we have challenges. You know, I put them into kind of three categories. You know, one is we have asked for restructuring, and now we need to reform. And I've suggested some ideas, and I know my colleagues have as well. You know, we have litigation, a lot of it. And I think people have the right to pursue what they feel is proper in the courts, and I think that people have the right to defend themselves, and I think we'll be aggressive in defending principle where we think that's appropriate. And so I don't know where it all ends up. I think it'll be a number of years before it becomes clear. Congress has also, from time to time, there have been two hearings, but from time to time have questions for people in higher education and in collegiate athletics. We ought to be available and open and responsive. I certainly hope that when the dust settles, there'll be a wide array of educational and athletic opportunities for men and women. It's hard to predict. For many, many, many years, it was a system that didn't always support men and women in an equal or comparable basis. We've built that. In many ways, we can improve on that balance. I hope we do that. And I hope at the end of the day the courts will support us in achieving that, because I think college sports is a great American tradition. It's not perfect. It's not a perfect enterprise. There's not a perfect enterprise, I think, that exists. But we can improve it, and we should. And I hope when the smoke settles and clears a bit, There'll be lots of opportunities for lots of young people across a myriad of college institutions in America.
Our next question here is stage left, four rows deep in the middle.
Commissioner Seth Gruen, Chicago Sun-Times. Obviously, the games need to be played out, but do you give any credence to concern about a potential power imbalance within the divisions?
You know, I don't, simply because, you know, during my tenure, I think we've had seven or eight different teams play in BCS quality games. We've had nine different teams play in the Rose Bowl. I've seen, you know, the strength of teams ebb and flow over time. The SEC's been doing their divisions for, you know, 22 or 3 years. And for a long time, the East was dominant, then the West was dominant. So I think these things ebb and flow. Northwestern's been to Rose Bowls. Wisconsin went to 3 or 4 in a row. Nebraska's won national championships. Iowa has played in very big games. Illinois has played in Rose Bowls and other major bowls. So when I think about the historic balance, I think that the teams will play out based on the quality of the players and quality of coaches, and I'm not worried about that part of it.
I'll stay on that side of the room with a question right here.
Rich Scarsella from the Reading Eagle. Jim, there was a report out yesterday about the possibility of neutral site games in New York and Washington involving Penn State, Maryland, and Rutgers. I was wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Really don't have any knowledge of that. You know, we had Indiana play, I think it was Penn State, in Baltimore a number of years ago, and I know Penn State has been very well-received in New York. I know I was at a game at the MetLife Stadium against Syracuse last year. If those are, you know, local games for Maryland and Rutgers, it'll be their call as to where they're played. Under our rules, the home team could do that if the visiting team was willing to do that. So I'm not familiar with it. I just came from a meeting with athletic directors. We were talking a lot about schedules, but that didn't come up. And like the letter from the five congressmen, it's news to me.
Take a question from Teddy on the left, and then come back down here to the front right.
Hey, Jim. Teddy Greenstein.
Hey,
even if the unionization effort fails at Northwestern, do you feel like it's inevitable that it'll happen somewhere, some team around the country, and what's that going to mean for college sports?
Yep. You know, I don't think there's anything that's inevitable. I think that the first thing I would say is it happened at Northwestern. I think it was surprising, but probably not shocking. And it'll get resolved there pursuant to the law and pursuant to the desires of the players. Whether or not it's got legs in other places around the country, it's hard to predict or project. I would say even at the outset that for the most part, these matters of labor and are really a state-by-state issue, especially for public institutions. And whatever happened at Northwestern is really more relevant, I think, to the Stanfords and the Vanderbilts of the world and not so much to the state institutions. So it certainly was interesting and surprising, but again, not shocking given the world that we live in. It's so dynamic. And, you know, we're interested to see, again, the thing go through the process that, you know, that we have in our country, which is a process of law and dispute resolution, which is fair and reasonable. And we'll work with whatever outcomes are there. And as it goes through, we'll present our position in a vigorous way.
Next question down here in front, stage right.
Jim, Todd Jones, Columbus Dispatch. On August 7th, the Division I Board of Directors votes on the proposed governance model. Do you anticipate that that will be passed? Do you anticipate that if it is passed, it will include enough autonomy to suit the Power Five conferences? And if it doesn't pass, what's next for the Big Ten and the other four conferences?
Yes, and I don't know. Yeah, I think it'll pass. And I think the list of autonomous issues will be sufficient. And if it doesn't, I really don't know what we would do except probably have some conversations in each of our conferences and come back, huddle up, and see what the next steps are. But I do anticipate that it would pass. I do anticipate that it would capture the autonomy issues that are important to us for assisting our student athlete in the 21st century in a way that that makes sense. And I would be very surprised if it doesn't pass.
Time for a couple more questions. Let's go over here to the far right, stage right.
Kevin Trahan from SB Nation. Going back to what you said about scheduling FCS teams, I mean, there are some instances where some top-level FCS teams are probably better than some of the bottom-level MAC teams, the Big Ten teams are scheduling, but they also cost a lot less, so it might be a better bargain and help strength schedule-wise. Would you be willing to make exceptions, allow schools to sort of decide on their own whether it's worth it to help their budgets or no?
Yeah, I mean, I, first of all, I think that there are FCS teams that have proven their mettle. I can think of one game in the Big Ten. It was the first game telecast by BTN that was quite a shocker and reflected well on Appalachian State. I know that Furman has won big games, Georgia Southern. So there are selected teams, but, you know, the bottom line is that FBS schools have 85 scholarships. FCS has 63 scholarships. The college football playoff entity has signaled to us in a policy statement approved by commissioners and presidents that they are looking for the four best teams in the country and that they're going to make that determination on the basis of the quality of your schedule, the strength of your schedule, winning championships head-to-head, and games against comparable opponents. So as we listen to that, you know, we don't think so much about budgets as we think about how to position our teams, if they're successful, for selection into that competition, because now that's the structure we have. And as we've thought about it, and I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about us, the athletic directors, you know, we've set on this 19-10 model, one intersectional, nine conference, one championship, and no games outside of FBS. Is that immutable? No. The athletic directors could come together at any time and make a change. But I don't expect that to happen in the near term. And if it did, I would think it would be in the direction of even stronger standards and guidelines, not more watered down standards or guidelines. So, you know, we don't have any predictions. We don't have any excuses. We are simply trying to put our teams into the best possible environment to be successful, and we think that is by encouraging them to play the strongest set of opponents.
Time for one more question, and we'll take it up here, stage left toward the back.
Hi, Jim. Scott Doctrine, the Cedar Rapids Gazette.
Hey, Scott.
I was interested in knowing the status of your television negotiations in the next coming years, and when in 2016, you know, do you see Big Ten broadcast over a wide variety of networks?
Yeah, we have spent a lot of time in preparation for those negotiations. They haven't started. We don't anticipate that that they would start in any immediate way. We have been able to integrate Rutgers and Maryland into BTN and ESPN, as well as get distribution. So we've been very busy over the last year in the television area to go from a 12 university conference to 14 and to make that seamless from a television perspective. Very pleased to get the distribution out east. As far as what might the future hold on TV, it's hard to predict. We are, you know, in probably the most dynamic and robust television marketplace when you read about the consolidation of companies or the proposed consolidation, when you think about how interested people are in sports and television and how it's sort of DVR-proof. You know, we're confident, but not overconfident. And we've done a lot of work to prepare for that time when it comes. And it's really difficult to speculate on whether it would be a single network or multiple networks. We're looking forward to getting out into that marketplace. But for now, we don't know exactly when that will happen, nor do we know exactly who that will entail at the end of the day.
That is Jim Delaney at yesterday's press conference in Chicago. A wide range of issues that he discussed. We'll come back, take a closer look at it in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, welcome back. There's one area where Kevin disagrees with the Jim Delaney press conference.
Well, I do. I thought the question regarding an a high quality FCS team instead of a lower tier FBS team, would they allow those teams to play, or would they allow Big Ten schools to play them? I think that's a legitimate question, and I think that's a really good idea, because as a fan, I mean, no disrespect to lower-ranked FBS teams, but I would like to see Eastern Washington Penn State or North Dakota State Penn State. I'd really like to see North Dakota State Penn State. I think that would be an entertaining matchup.
Yeah, but there's only one North Dakota State.
Agreed.
And you can't. And the other part, too, is that you mentioned Eastern Washington, for example. Towson went out and played Eastern Washington last year in the playoff, right? They played out
on the red turf.
On the red turf. Okay, so Towson obviously was one of the top, I don't know, eight teams in FCS, right?
I think that, yeah, yeah.
Is there any person on the planet that wants to go to Beaver Stadium and watch Towson play Penn State?
Again, I'm not talking Townsend. I'm talking about North Dakota State, though, Steve.
There's only one North Dakota State.
I understand that.
There's only one. Okay, so there's only so many games they can schedule. Hey, you're talking about the entirety of 14 schools in the Big Ten.
JMU's another program that I think is worthy.
Nobody wants to watch them, Kevin. Nobody. Okay. You put James Madison on the schedule, we got people calling this show complaining.
Not me.
Right? Well, maybe not you, but other people. James Madison. What are we playing James Madison for? I mean, they're mad about Akron.
I mean, I know.
They're
understand.
Mad about UMass.
I understand. Several years ago, there was a big uproar about Penn State putting on Youngstown State in a last minute thing. Youngstown State wasn't a bad team that year either at FCS.
Doesn't matter. People don't want to watch them. That's a big issue.
I watched Coastal Carolina. I liked watching that game. Coastal Carolina got beat soundly, but I liked watching it.
One satisfied customer.
I guess I'm unique in many ways.
We'll talk more about this because there's some merits to what you're saying in one way. We'll talk about it.